Everyone loves a good story, and the Joseph saga that we read today from Genesis is one of the best that the Bible has to offer. I'm sure you recall the tale. Joseph is a cocky daddy's boy who flaunts his preferred status and fancy coat in front of his 11 older brothers, including using his God-given ability to interpret dreams to foretell his greatness over them. Eventually, the brothers can't take it anymore and decide to eliminate the problem. Just as they're working up the courage to kill him, a band of traitors passes by, and Judah, the eldest brother, convinces his siblings to sell Joseph into slavery instead of committing fratricide. Joseph is taken to Egypt, where, after several highs and lows, he's eventually summoned before Pharaoh to draw on his dream-telling ability to save the country from a terrible famine. Pharaoh rewards Joseph by restoring his freedom and elevating him to prominence in the government, managing the food surpluses for the nation to survive the eventual famine. When the famine hits Joseph's family back in Cana, the brothers come to Egypt to beg for grain, presenting themselves before Pharaoh's awesome and powerful representative, who, unbeknownst to them, is their brother. Our reading today is the big revelation scene. Joseph not only tells his brother who he is, and more importantly, he demonstrates who he has become. The kind of person who, instead of extracting revenge on those who sought to destroy him, embraces his former enemies and invites them back into his life with tears of joy. I first heard this Joseph story in fifth grade Bible and theology class from our wonderfully colorful and beloved chaplain, Mr. Apple. Charlie Apple was pretty much my idol as a child, as he was the idol of almost everyone in our all-boys elementary Episcopal school. A layman at the time, this man was everything we wanted to be, witty and cool and incredibly loving to each one of us. He was the best kind of teacher, devoted to his charges as people, not just as students, willing to sacrifice himself for them each and every day. I was crushed when he chose to take a sabbatical the year I was to have him as my homeroom teacher so that he could go to seminary to become an Episcopal priest. But he returned to our school the next year as our now ordained chaplain, weaving his wonderful stories in chapel and instilling in us boys the gospel of Jesus through his creativity, role modeling, and love. Day in and day out, this man served me and my classmates with kindness, passion, and indefatigable patience. If you haven't tried doing that school year after school year, you can only imagine how hard that can be with a pack of unruly middle school boys. I am certain that I became a teacher, and then a school chaplain, and then a priest, in large part because of the example of this man in my life. As many of you know, Karen and I named our first son Charlie. Mr. Apple's influence on my life has been extraordinary. I know now what I was too young to know then. Mr. Apple was one of God's many instruments in my life. Mr. Apple's teaching of this story to our class centered on one idea that has shaped my thinking about all of life ever since. The idea is captured in Joseph's words of forgiveness and understanding to his brothers. He says, "Do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me into slavery. For God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant on the earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt." At the foundation of our faith is the conviction that God doesn't just passively love us, God actively loves us. God is intertwined in the events and people of our lives, working through jealous brothers and fifth grade teachers and all the ups and downs of life, working in us to bring us closer to Him to better fulfill our purpose in the work of building His kingdom. 14th century theologian John Calvin wrote this of this Genesis passage. "Note how often God not only resists the malice of those who desire to harm us, but also turns their evil efforts to our good. Calvinism takes the idea of God's involvement in human affairs to its extreme, asserting that everything is essentially preordained. My theology and that of mainline Episcopalianism leaves somewhat more room for human freedom, human participation in the work of God in the world, which is exactly my message for you today. In the Joseph story, God used the circumstances brought about by Joseph's brothers not only to get the perfect dream interpreter into Pharaoh's midst at just the right moment to save Egypt and the Canaanites from famine, he also used the circumstances to change Joseph and his brothers into who he aspired for them to be. Through his suffering and loss, Joseph changed into a man who could turn the other cheek and show compassion for those who were once his enemies. The Joseph of his childhood would have at least lorded his eventual power over his brothers, if not indeed crushed them for what they tried to do to him. Through suffering himself, Joseph grew closer to God. Did God cause those traitors to pass by just in time to give Reuben the chance to do the right thing of selling Joseph rather than killing him? Who can say? But it's clear that Reuben acted at the key moment to change the course of the story, of Joseph's life, of the history of the nation. The interplay of choice and action and circumstances exemplifies perfectly our own position in the shaping of our world, in participating in the holy work of building up the kingdom of God every day. This is what we talk about at Trinity School when we exhort our students to be upstanders, doing what is right even when it's hard, making a positive difference in the world. This is what Outward Bound founder Kurt Hahn meant in his slogan, "We are a crew, not passengers, strengthened by acts of consequential service to others." Service changes, ennobles us while it changes and improves the world. This, of course, is what Jesus is talking about in our extraordinary and perhaps somewhat unsettling gospel reading today. Jesus says, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also." Really? This good news seems like a lot of bad advice. This teaching, like much of what Jesus calls us to do and to be, is really, really hard. Unlike the latest self-help books, which encourage us to develop our personal power and achieve our personal goals, this advice seems more like a recipe for disaster. "From anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again." This kind of thinking runs against our natural inclinations for self-protection and self-interest, against our desires and our will. This passage, it seems, runs against the ways of the world. The passage we read today is from Luke, the gospel that is the most vivid retelling of the story of Jesus' time on earth. It's the gospel we recall in Christmas pageants with the backdrop of Roman power and the leaping of John in Elizabeth's womb, with the shepherds and the innkeeper and the manger, all the really earthy details that root us in the truth that the story of Jesus is about the inbreaking of the power of God into the real world we inhabit every day, the epiphany of God in our lives. The Gospel of Luke takes seriously a God who uses people and events and all of the components of life to reveal God's purpose in history and to reveal God's love for the created world. By his word and his example, Jesus offers us a choice. Live a life in response to the way of the world, the way we are treated by those in the world who wish to take advantage of us and harm us, perpetuating the cycle of selfishness and greed we encounter every day, or live a life in response to the grace, forgiveness, and love showered on us by our Maker. Love your enemies, Jesus tells us. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High. Participate with God, Jesus promises us, and we will be rewarded, not with full pockets or worldly honor, but with something far more important. When we transform the world through self-sacrifice and show love, especially for the unlovable, when we turn the other cheek and terminate the cycle of hate, we are transformed too. We become a more polished reflection of God's glory. We live into our truest identity as children of God. This is hard. Of course it is. Could real transformation be anything otherwise? The call of Jesus in Luke is to a way contrary to our human nature, a way that is possible only as we live out of a new power from above. To answer hurt with forgiveness is possible only with Christ as our teacher, our example, and our strength. The Joseph stories end with Joseph's act of almost superhuman forgiveness and grace for his would-be murderer brothers. If Joseph had behaved as most people would, throwing his brothers into prison or slavery, Abraham and his line would have perished, and things would have turned out very differently for the Jews, for Jesus, and for us. But by forgiveness, Joseph transforms his world, his brothers, and himself. Like my dear Charlie Apple, like Jesus himself, Joseph chose the harder path. Do we have the courage to do the same?